The World in Words is made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, exploring the human endeavor.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.
Hi, Patrick Cox here with a pod on military slang from the Americans and the Brits. In the old days, a lot of slang, maybe even most slang, had its beginnings among men in uniform, be they soldiers or sailors or what have you. Today, slang evolves in all manner of subcultures, but the military still chips in. And every time an army moves into a new setting, it picks up a few more words and phrases specific to that place. And then, over time, if the slang sticks around, it becomes universal. It outgrows its original specificity, be it geographical or tied to a local language. You see this with the US military, and you see it even more with the Brits, for the simple reason that the British military has been around longer and, for better or worse, has occupied more places around the world. Patrick Hennessy knows all about this. He's written about it, in fact. He's a former British Army captain who was deployed to both Iraq and Afghanistan. Here he is talking with the Big Show's Marco Werman, first explaining the terms Terry and jingly trucks.
Terry was the kind of nickname we got for the Taliban quite early on, I think just because Terry begins with a T, but it kind of conjures up something slightly more humorous than, right, than the Taliban actually were. And the jingly trucks will be very familiar to anyone who spent any time in the subcontinent. It doesn't happen to be Afghanistan, but India, Pakistan, anywhere around there, where you get these practically kind of artwork vehicles covered in colours and little charms and little chains. But of course, sadly, in lots of parts of Afghanistan, a big truck making its way ominously towards you was not necessarily what you wanted to see when you were on sentry duty.
Right, those decorated trucks are more like buses for taking people around.
Yeah, I think the closest I've ever seen to anything like them in the Western world is Burning Man. So you get a kind of impression of how weird they are.
Right. And what about crap hats and armor barma?
Armor barma. Well, barma was the word that the British Army gave to its kind of IED testing equipment. Operation Barma. Op Barma was this sort of thing that looks a little bit like a kind of handheld vacuum cleaner that you used to kind of move over the ground checking for metal signature. Obviously a very kind of tense and unpleasant job.
Looking for IEDs, right?
Exactly, yeah. Looking for kind of buried IEDs, pressure plates, legacy Soviet mines, that sort of thing. Usually a job that fell on one of the junior soldiers in the squad. I guess the equivalent would have been the poor guys who spent a lot of time walking point in Vietnam you referred to earlier. Crap hats is a funny one. It's actually not an Afghan term. It's been around for ages, but it's from airborne troops. I think probably going all the way back to the Second World War when the parachute regiment was formed. And the parachute regiment, because they were quite young, they only had berets. They didn't have ceremonial hats with stiff lids.
Right.
So the paras have always referred to the rest of the army as hats because they were very proud that they never had hats. And obviously they think they're better than everyone else. And in all armies, everyone tends to think they're better than everyone else, don't they?
They do. So it just strikes me that as you're talking about that, British military slang, whether it's berets or kind of military strategy, must differ a lot from US army slang.
Yeah, I think so. And actually, one of the things that I think will be interesting when both military historians and maybe kind of lexicographers look back at this period is a lot of the slang, and not just slang, but kind of everyday usage that the British Army has taken on in the last decade has derived from our close work with the Americans in Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, 10, 15 years ago, nobody in the British Army would have referred to a tick, which of course comes from the US troops in contact. And that is now a completely common usage. Also, I think things like a MERT, the medical emergency response team or medical evacuation response team, that is a phrase that we've borrowed from you guys and is now in completely common usage. So it's interesting to see that kind of cross-pollination of acronyms and slang and also doctrine as well.
Right. And I suppose that the British history around the world, like colonization in India, I mean,
yeah, I think bakshi is a kind of bastardization of a phrase that comes from India, meaning kind of free or acquired. And any kit that you get in the British Army without having to sign for has always been bakshi kit. So you can kind of trace the historical development. The other one I really liked, and I think this is something that the the American military, particularly those that have been stationed in Europe, in Germany, Western Germany in particular, have picked up, is there's still lots and lots of German language in the British Army. So it's probably one of the only places where everybody goes for a Roik, for a cigarette from Rauchen,
right,
rather than for anything else.
So there are plenty of examples, it seems, of empire history that you can still hear on patrol today.
Oh yeah, very much so. And I would be curious to see in years to come what we picked up from Afghanistan itself. I mean, we worked very closely with the Afghan National Security Forces. And so a lot of the terms, the kind of specific military terms, Kandak for a battalion, Tolai for a company, I used to get called Toran Paddy, which was Captain Paddy by my Afghan troops. And I'm sure that in 100 years time or so, there'll be sergeants on the drill square at the Royal Military Academy Sandhurst still talking about Kandaks to kind of show their historical credibility.
Terry for Taliban, I mean, it's kind of a weird one because Terry seems like a nice name, and that Taliban guy might be kind of nice. And, I, you know, some U.S. soldiers called the locals in Iraq Hajis, derived from anyone who traveled to Mecca and made the pilgrimage or Hajj. But Haji is an insult. It's demeaning. Does British military slang ever get ugly?
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting that, I mean, Haji is only an insult insofar as you deploy it as an insult. It's a term of respect in many senses. I think the tendency towards something like Terry that kind of seems anodyne is not necessarily to humanize the enemy, because in fact we see kind of in militaries often the opposite. But I think that the British Army in particular has a kind of history of a bit of black humor. And it's much easier to fight somebody if they're an object of ridicule rather than an object of fear. So I think there's a famous comedian, Terry Thomas, who's a bit of a ridiculous clown. I always loved the fact that that the nickname we seem to have come up for the Taliban was sort of much more ridiculous than it was threatening. You know, in answer to your the kind of the other premise of your question, it is always the way that that militaries come up with derogatory terms. And what we ask our servicemen and women to do is something very difficult. We ask them to go outside the normal bounds of kind of human conduct and behavior, but to do so in a controlled fashion. And I think we're sometimes hypocrites when we expect them to be able to, you know, prosecute extreme violence on our behalf, and yet somehow not to lapse into derogatory term or kind of lacking of what might be termed kind of cultural understanding. It is very difficult at the same time to be shooting someone and still to be sympathetic to them.
Yeah, I'll bet. What is your favorite bit of British military slang that you heard on patrol and which you still use to this day as a civilian?
Well, the one I used to love from Afghanistan is, as I say, we worked with the Afghans pretty closely, and we had this real character of an Afghan commander who had fought for the Afghan forces with the Russians against the Mujahideen in the early 90s, but had then kind of switched sides. He was a real sort of shady character, but he was the most natural warrior you've ever come across, and one of the bravest men I've certainly ever seen. And the Dari, the Afghan word for problems, is mushkil, which again I think is similar to that you find in Urdu and a lot of languages in that part of the world. And mushkil nis was basically no problems, which is a nice phrase to hear when you're a commander, but this guy used to deploy at the most extraordinary moments. So his definition of mushkil nis, of no problems, would be an ambush on three sides with an IED up front. But there was something wonderfully kind of breaking of the atmosphere to see him ambling up from his wagon, bullets sort of flying everywhere, putting a rifle to his shoulder and just looking at me with a smile and saying, Toran Paddy, mushkil nis, no problems.
I will use that from now on instead of no problems. It's got a nice ring to it, mushkil nis. Patrick Hennessy, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Marco, thanks for having me. It's been great.
Good to know that slang isn't only evolving on the internet. We also put out the word to American vets about this, asking what slang terms did they use in Iraq or Afghanistan? We asked people to keep it clean. They didn't. But then again, that's like asking Stephen Hawking to keep it simple. But there were some cleanish expressions, all the slang that's fit to print, you might say, or pod. To kick off, here's one from Adam Dillon. He's a staff sergeant in U.S. Army Special Operations. His expression, popping smoke.
That's a term for when you're calling for air extract, like with helicopters, you throw out a smoke grenade and they vector in on it for extraction from a hot area. Well, it's turned into a slang with veterans for getting out of somewhere quickly, leaving an area, getting away from a date, running away. You know, just say we just pop smoke and get out of there.
Popping smoke is also a favorite of the Big Show's Max Rosenthal, himself an army vet who went to Iraq. Here he is explaining the meaning of some of the other terms sent in to us. Marco is feeding him the words.
Goat rodeo.
Yeah, a goat rodeo. Well, the military, unsurprisingly, has many ways to describe things that have gone horribly wrong, because that seems to be the default state of affairs in a lot of cases. So goat rodeo is a little like herding cats. It's just when something has gone completely haywire and there's no order or sense to it, again, which happens a lot. And there are so many terms that describe this. Charlie Foxtrot is one that may be familiar to a lot of people. CF. You can describe somebody as a ate up is one that we use a lot, or a soup sandwich is also a pretty common one. You know, things that just simply make absolutely no sense.
So like FUBAR back in the day, again, it's been acronymized so we don't have to say the dirty bits on air. Here's another one, chair force.
Yes, there's plenty of inter-service rivalry in the military, and the Air Force takes the brunt of most of it. So I was a linguist in the Army, and so I went to language school. And in our barracks, the barracks that the soldiers were simply expected to live in without complaint, because never without complaint, because that's not the way we roll. But our standard living was substandard for the Air Force. So the airmen who were told to live in the barracks with us because there wasn't room for them in the Air Force dorms were given extra pay because they were forced into the indignity of living in Army quarters. So that's kind of the soft stereotype of the Air Force, and I'm not sure I'd say stereotype. It's probably pretty accurate. So
right, a life of luxury in the Air Force. Here's one that I love. I'm not sure I understand it. You're going to break it down Barney style for them. What does Barney style mean?
Basically, the assumption in the Army is that everything needs to go down to the lowest common denominator. And again, that's surprisingly true in a lot of cases. So when somebody says you're going to break it down Barney style, that means, dude, I already tried to tell you this and you just didn't get it. And I don't understand why you're such a moron. So let me tell you it in the most excruciatingly painful, simple details so that you don't screw this up again. Inevitably, that person will then come back 45 minutes later having screwed it up, and we'll pay for it.
All right, here's one. And I know you were in the Army, but this deals with another branch of the services. Stay frosty, Marines.
Stay frosty. Anybody who wants to get a really great class in the use of Stay Frosty should watch Generation Kill, which is an amazing HBO series that follows Marines around, fictionalized, of course. But Stay Frosty means, you know, just stay alert, be on your guard. We always said head on a swivel. That's what a lot of your NCOs would always say when they wanted you to, you know, stay alert, stay alive.
The ability to have your head turn around 360 degrees.
Of course, you know, these are the demands.
All right, finally, Max, on the food theme, self-licking ice cream cone. Are you sure that's not dirty?
It depends on what kind of ice cream you like, I guess. so much of the slang comes back to just people who can't quite put it all together. And so there are many ways to describe people who are not just a mess, but kind of incapable of doing things that seem pretty easy or just involve a little bit of common sense. So a self-licking ice cream cone is something that makes about that much sense. It's just a way of capturing the inherent ridiculousness of about 95% of the situations you find yourself in.
So Max, you've been back as a civilian now for a little over 3 years. Do you still use some of the slang that you picked up when you were deployed?
Yeah, I have popped smoke on occasion. That sometimes comes out, and because it's just so useful and is inevitably followed by just some blank and bewildered stares and then long explanations like these. So it happens. It definitely, it's hard to kick the habit, especially when you get around people who also spent time in and old habits just seem to resurface very easily.
Max Rosenthal, the Big Show's digital editor, talking with Marco Werman. The pod is online at pri.org/language. Also on Facebook, there's a World in Words page. You can find the other podcasts in the Soundworks network at soundworks.org. And I'm on Twitter, tweeting all kinds of language bits and bobs. My handle is Patricox, PatriCox. More soon. Well, soonish. I'm actually about to go on a reporting trip, so it'll be a couple of weeks. See you then.
The World in Words is made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, Exploring the Human Endeavor. The World in Words is also supported in part by PRI's New Voices Fund, bringing new perspectives and personalities to public media. Donors to the fund include Maureen and Michael Rutgers and the Sarah and Evan Williams Foundation.
Soundworks.
Soundworks
from PRI.